again, everybody, and welcome back to episode 108 of the Cold Beer and Cool Movie Podcast. My name is Dustin.
And I'm Lakeisha.
And welcome back to the Portland-based beer-loving, movie-loving podcast. And this week, we jump into the first big superhero throwdown of 2020.
I know.
As we got to see an advanced screening a couple weeks ago of Birds of Prey.
Yeah. The Emancipation of Harley Quinn.
Which I don't even think is the actual title of the movie anymore.
No, but they've put it on there like as the, it's like the Birds of Prey, a.k.a.
Right.
So, which I think is a little weird, but oh well.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, pretty fun movie?
Yeah. I thought it was much better than I feared it was going to be, you know? But I'm disappointed that it's not getting as good of reviews as I think it deserves.
Yeah.
You know, but I was worried about how the many directions they could have gone. But overall, I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of cool that it was rated R.
Same. Yeah. I think critical reviews have been mostly positive. I'm a little bummed out didn't make more money.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, I think it's being unfairly painted as a flop because even though it didn't make as much money as Warner Brothers wanted, it's still overall is making back its budget, and right. It was a rated R movie, which is, you know.
Right. And, I mean, I feel like it's definitely got better reviews than Suicide Squad.
Oh, it's a far better movie than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we get further into Birds of Prey, like always, we each have a different beverage that we're going to talk about, that we're going to have during the podcast. I'll just go ahead and go first.
Yep. I think that sounds good.
I am having a beer from Balebreaker Brewing Company. Balebreaker is a brewery out of Yakima Valley up in Washington State. Started in 2013 and since then has been grown into the fourth largest independent brewery in the state.
Wow. Good for them.
It's a sibling owned brewery. A brother and sister own it. They say that their great-grandparents first planted hops in Yakima Valley back in 1932, the year before Prohibition ended.
Mm.
I am having their Lyota May IPA. Lyota May, named for the great-grandmother in that little story.
Okay.
That supposedly planted the hops back in 1932. 6.2% alcohol by volume, made with four different types of hops. And it is, I love the little story that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
The beer itself it's okay. It has it has a good bitter bite to it, but there's an aftertaste that I don't care a ton for.
Mm.
I know. But it's fine. You know, it's nice and pretty light. So it's a pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. I know, stellar
review. I know, I was going to say excellent. Mm-hmm. well, funny enough, I am also drinking a beer from where they started in 2013. So the beer that I am drinking is Riverbend Brewing Company. Started in 2013 in Bend, Oregon. Interestingly enough, this is a beer that has gone through an almost failure story. Like, I guess not almost failure. But what happened is the Riverbend Brewing Company started in 2013. In 2018, their brew pub in downtown Bend closed.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And the reason that they closed is that they were, the owner was experiencing some health problems. He was 70 years old.
Mm.
And his wife had also had some health challenges, and so they decided that they needed to close down temporarily, but the brewers were planning on basically taking over, and so just in terms of finding just a distillery where they could just brew beer and then maybe opening a tasting room after the fact. But it does sound like they've been doing that pretty successfully because they're still making beer. And so now they just have a brewery and distribute and a distribution company. They don't really have a restaurant
or a
pub right now.
Yeah.
Or at least not that I can find that the pub part is open.
Mm.
So I am drinking Organized Love, spelled Oregonized Love. Northwest India Pale Ale. And the description is, we love our beautiful home state of Oregon and everything it has to offer. From the snow-capped Cascades to the windy rivers, all the way to the Rocky Coast. A place this great deserves an IPA to match. We set the bar high using only the Northwest's finest hops. Sit back, take a sip, and taste what we love about Oregon. And so this has Chinook and Mosaic hops. Primarily, so it's got lots of citrusy, pine, grapefruit flavors, and then it's got 65 IBUs, international bitter units, and then a new scale that I can't believe I've never heard of.
Okay,
which is the SRM, which apparently is called the standard reference method.
Yeah, okay.
Right? I know. That's what I said. Okay. And essentially what it is it is a way of measuring a beer's shade, its color palette. So going from the lightest to the darkest that it could possibly go. So I was very intrigued by this because that seemed very odd. But yeah, so this has got 11 SRM, which seems to be in the standard range for an IPA, which means it's kind of got a nice golden color, not the pale yellow that you would associate with like a lager or a super light pale ale. But it's, I don't know. So now I'm going to start looking at SRMs of beers from this point on.
11 out of a scale of what?
That's a really good question. A lot. Like when you look at the scale, it kind of goes up. It looks like it goes up to 40 plus is what they say. So it starts at one and then it goes to 40 plus according to the different scales that I've seen.
Is it the bigger the number, the darker the color type of thing or the other way around?
Yes. Okay. The bigger the number, the darker it is. So it's just, it was a really interesting kind of idea. I had never heard of that, but apparently it's been around for at least over a decade. anyway, it's pretty good. It's a very smooth IPA. It's got a nice hoppy, citrusy flavor. It's not very bitter. There's not a bite, you know, an aftertaste with a bite to it. So it's pretty good.
Okay.
Light. I like that it's a light, crisp flavor. Sometimes IPAs, when they are pretty hoppy, they can have a heavier, bitter flavor, which I also appreciate, but this is not it.
Okay. All right. Well, and with that, we'll get into this week's movie, Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Based off the several iterations of that same named comic book series from DC Comics, typically a team of female heroes, anti-heroes, occasionally villain shows up in the pages. What we do is we've taken come up with our three favorite things about the movie. I haven't shared them with each other until now. We'll go back and forth doing that. Spoiler alert, if you haven't gotten out to see the Birds of Prey, as we don't bother to pull back on plot details and stuff.
Right. We're totally going to talk about all our favorite parts about the movie. And maybe our not so favorite parts about the movie. Either way, we're not going to shy away from what happens in this movie.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, before we begin, I do have a question for you. So my introduction to the Birds of Prey, I have to admit, was the really not great
TV series.
And short-lived TV series, which I enjoyed in part because of how old I was when it came out. And I just really appreciated like a, you know, female-centric superhero movie. So I liked the TV show.
Okay.
But that was also a really long time ago.
Yes.
So briefly, and I know this will be hard for you.
Okay.
But briefly, just give a recap of, in the comics, who are the Birds of Prey?
Well, there's been several iterations of the team. The one I'm familiar with involves former Batgirl Barbara Gordon, who takes the name Oracle. Mm-hmm. And she, she's been paralyzed. She's in a wheelchair, runs, communications, technical stuff for the women out in the field, which is typically Black Canary, Huntress. I know Harley's in this movie, but she's typically not a Bird of Prey. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of varied as to who they come in to. And then eventually Barbara Gordon gets out of the wheelchair and she's out in the field too. So
right. Okay. So they're just, it's like a all-female superhero trio.
Yeah.
Do they operate out of Gotham?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. There we go. So just wanted to kind of set the stage of like how realistic, or not realistic, but like how much of this they pull from directly from the comics and all that good stuff as we go into it.
Lady Blackhawk. That's another one that shows up. But that's a very obscure character that Gail Simone brought in. Anyway.
Okay. You did a good job with briefly. I expected to have to cut you off.
Okay.
All right. But I didn't, so good for you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, let's dive in.
All right. So my first favorite thing. Well, first of all, this movie has several really good, especially for a superhero movie, as I feel a lot, we see a lot of them. And I think a lot of the action sequences maybe get a little samey, you know? And they do a really good job of making with their choreography. And so there's several action set pieces in this movie that are really good.
Mm-hmm.
The best of which is one that involves Harley Quinn going into a police station.
Yeah.
She's going in there to retrieve a character named Cassandra Cain, right? Now, there's a bunch of stuff that happens in this sequence. I'll just fast forward to the part where I think she's either like in an evidence locker type area where it's all... she doesn't have like a weapon. It's just all kind of, you know, hand to hand or foot to face combat stuff. And it's a Harley Quinn highlight reel. What I really enjoy about the women in this movie and what they did with the, is they all had, they really seemed to me make a point of they all had very distinct ways of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And Harley Quinn is very, like in the comics, she's typically considered an Olympic level gymnast as far as her physical abilities. And her fighting style in this movie is just high risk, high reward, acrobatic, aerial, just really incredibly fun stuff to watch as an audience goer. And in that sequence when she's trying to protect and get Cassandra out of the police precinct and knocking out cops throughout that evidence locker, it's over the top because it's Harley and it's all acrobatics, but it's also pretty violent too, because, you know, like I said, they made this movie rated R, and that's how besides the language, they got it with the violence.
Right.
So yeah, that sequence and really highlighting the fight style that they came up for her was, I think, the best action set piece of the movie and my first favorite thing.
So I felt like I thought it was cool. So John Wick, one of the action like directors from John Wick, he helped craft the fight sequences for all of the characters in this movie, which I think is pretty cool. Because we've seen John Wick, all three of them, and I enjoy them. And they have incredibly brutal and yet artistic fight scenes. And you definitely see that same effect in this movie, too.
Yeah. So. The people that do it seems like the people that worked on the Wick movies are in demand.
Yeah.
Because even like the TV show Stumptown... that we watch.
Yeah.
When we, based on a comic book series by Greg Rucka, who we've talked about many times before, we've met Greg a bunch of times, and we talked to him this past fall about Stumptown, and he told us at Rose City Comic Con about how they did have some people who worked on Wick doing the fight choreography in Stumptown.
Right. Which is really cool.
Really cool, yeah.
So, yeah, I like it. I think the thing that I like, one of the things I like most of all is that they really adapted, I mean, fight styles And yes, it's a superhero movie, so some of it definitely seems like, could that really happen?
Well, you're right.
But they do it really well, taking into account that these are female fighters and how would a woman fight a man?
Mm-hmm.
And they do the same thing in things like Atomic Blonde is another good one, where they take into consideration that really a woman could fight a man and be just as lethal, but she'll use different skills. Like, she won't necessarily rely just on, like, brute strength.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of cool that it was a rated R movie. You know, like, you don't see female-led action movies be rated R.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's like a graphic sex scene or whatever. And so it was refreshing, I think, to see all of that.
Yeah.
So that was not my first thing.
Okay.
That was just kind of my bonus at the beginning. I appreciated just the whole, like, Harley's breakup with the Joker.
Oh, sure.
You know, like, first of all, it's a great... These sequences are good, and every woman at, like, on some level totally related to Harley as she's dealing with her breakup. I mean, what girl hasn't gone through that particular breakup process? Specifically the one where you, you know, go out and you party with friends to try and take your mind off of the breakup.
Uh-huh.
Second thing, you're at home, bawling your eyes out. You know, maybe you don't use the can of Cheese Whiz, but you do have your can of, like, whipped cream or cookie dough or whatever.
Your comfort.
I'm going to hate myself
tomorrow morning your food.
Comfort food.
Yeah.
You go out and you get a new pet, you know. Not everybody brings home a hyena. But, you know, bringing home a new pet is not an unusual breakup thing. And then, you know, what girl doesn't go and blow up your special spot with your former, the spot that was special with you and your ex? I mean, Harley Quinn literally blows it up, the Ace Chemical plant.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, what girl hasn't wanted to do that? So it's just a great little sequence. And I think, given that Harley Quinn's origin story is really about, you know, she loses her whole self to the Joker.
To
she loses her identity. She loses her sanity. Everything that was really her, she loses and gives to the Joker. And so it is, I mean, even though this movie is supposed to be introducing the Birds of Prey, it really is about Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And but I appreciate that this is really her emancipation. She reclaims her identity, not her sanity by any means.
No.
but she does kind of reclaim who she is and forge ahead with a kind of a new identity and individuality. And she does so not being any saner or any more a hero or a good guy. Like, she's not a good person. And there's a degree to which that's almost the perfect emancipation for her because, you know, by the end of this movie, she's really free of all rules. She's free of the Joker kind of, you know, being her primary identity. She's free of, like, her kind of more repressive psychologist self.
Uh-huh.
So it was kind of cool. Like, if you really step back and just kind of watch that arc for her, even though it's really funny and it's really crazy and it's really over the top, it is a great story of that kind of reclamation of yourself.
Mm.
So I liked it.
Okay. Yeah. I kind of forgot about that beginning, actually. You know, but my second thing is just what I felt was essentially the second best action sequence of the movie. After a night at the Black Masks Club, Dinah Lance, the Black Canary, is leaving. She's just heading for her car to head home when she sees a couple of guys trying to abscond with a very drunk Harley Quinn, trying to get her into a van. And as she could tell that she, like, just wants to leave, you know, she's not really happy with the position she finds herself with within the Black Masks, organization, you know, but eventually she's like, well, I just can't let this, you know, these sleazeballs take this woman who is, you know, can barely walk, you know?
Right.
And so, and this is another great, I feel like, if you're looking for it, definitive, different fighting style, which perfectly fits with Black Canary in the books. You know, it's a very to the point, no nonsense, tactical, disciplined fighting style. I wish there had been like a flashback to something of her, where she how she trained in the books. You know, mm-hmm. would have been cool. But no, like, but that when she puts those guys through the windows of the van and just brutally. I mean, it's a way shorter sequence than the one I mentioned previously. But I think it might actually be more brutal.
Yeah,
it is. You really feel it when she puts the wood to those guys. And it's also because the circumstances of her doing it, you know, is very satisfying, mm-hmm. you know? And so, yeah, and it's great because everyone, like, if you're unfamiliar with the character and you just Black Canary, Sonic Scream, and fishnet stockings, but really she is one of the best hand-to-hand fighters mm-hmm. in DC Comics. Like, right. if, you know, so I like that they really pushed her as being, you know.
Yeah.
A really hard
blue debtor fighting. Yeah. I will reference this a little bit later, but like I really liked kind of the Huntress and the Black Canary renditions in the series Young Justice.
Mm-hmm.
That was on what was it?
The animated series.
Yeah,
right?
The animated yeah. series for a while. And that was but that's something they also feature in that series is mm-hmm. that Black Canary trains a lot of the young, you know, the young Justice Leaguers how to fight because she is so right. good. So
yeah, there's also the animated series Justice League Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
There's what is a lot of people will see as their favorite episode is called Date Night, and it involves Black Canary, Green Arrow, Huntress, and the Question. Like kind of a
double date.
Kind of a double date. It also involves the Huntress's origin story. Black Canary being, and it ends with her and Huntress being friends, that's sparring in like a ring, and written by Gail Simone, actually, okay. too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's really good.
All right. Well, my second thing actually is how awkward the Huntress is, you know?
Yeah,
because
that
was, I said, I really liked the character Huntress in Young Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't read a lot of her about her in the comics or anything. So, but I did like that they really played on the social awkwardness of the Huntress
yeah.
because apparently, you know, she's been growing up in rural Sicily,
yeah.
you know, learning how to be an assassin. And apparently they just taught her how to be an assassin, not how to blend in and learn social niceties or something. Mm-hmm. But it, like, they really kind of hone in on that with, you know, the scene where she's practicing, she's in the bathroom and she's looking in the mirror and she's trying to practice her intimidation face and her introduction, like,
right.
you can call me. And she's trying to like try on her different faces and voices. And, I just kind of liked that take on the fact that they were also okay with these characters, you know, not all being, you know, perfect or smooth or suave or,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything. And for, I thought it was really funny, you know, and at one point in time, you know, she finally gets to say it because she walks in and it's with the other women and she's like, you can call me. And Montoya, like, interrupts her and like mm-hmm. calls out her name and she's just like, oh, for fuck's sake, like, come on, I just want to be able to like do my introduction. So I really liked that. I liked that, you know, she's mm-hmm. clearly a flawed individual, just like the rest of them, and yet is exceptionally capable
yeah.
and able to adapt, you know, yeah. like team up and be like, oh, maybe this having friends thing isn't a bad thing.
Yeah. I like that they made that kind of, gave her that quirk, mm-hmm. you know, which doesn't really exist in the books I've read. But I'm fine with it because they could have just easily brought in, oh, she's just another kick-ass,
yeah.
you know, lady fighter. And there would have been really nothing to differentiate her from anyone else other than she wears purple.
Right.
So that really made her stand out and be her own character mm-hmm. that you remember. Other than she uses a crossbow, and that's kind of a joke.
Right. Well, I love that they consistently call her the crossbow guy, and she's like super offended by that.
Well, when someone says boat refers to it as her using a bow and arrow, and she's like, it's a crossbow. I'm not fucking 12. Yeah. That was great. That might have been the funniest line of the movie for me. No. All right. For my last favorite thing. So back in 2013, a solo Harley Quinn comic book series, which I have somewhere, like the first, I want to say, dozen issues of, came from real life. I don't know that they're married, but they've been a couple together for many, many years. Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor launched this solo Harley Quinn series, and there's just so much from that series that they borrowed for this. Mm-hmm. That series starts with seeing Harley in the breaking off from the Joker. In that series, though, she actually leaves Gotham and goes to, like, New Jersey. As I recall,
I can totally see her in New Jersey.
But like the roller derby stuff mm-hmm. came from that run. The stuffed beaver.
Yeah.
That in the comic book series she thinks can talk to her because she's still kind of crazy. The hyena. Just a lot of stuff. And also, there's like a little animated sequence where they talk about her former life as Harleen Quinzel mm-hmm. and when college and how she had unlucky with love. And there's this animated sequence where you see, like, essentially a slot machine, and you see these other people spin up and these other guys where she apparently dated and it didn't work out. Except the last one spins up and it's not another guy, it's a woman. Mm-hmm. It's a woman with red hair that is drawn to look a lot like Pamela Isley, aka Poison Ivy.
Oh.
Because it has been intimated many a time in the books that they, Harley and Ivy, have a thing.
Oh, okay.
And Jimmy and Amanda, they, when they do sexual innuendo in their comics, they are not subtle.
So it's not really innuendo.
It's not really, and it's, yeah, it's straight up. They're like, they're constantly like just laying in bed together, you know. But so a ton of nods from that series, and I'm sure others too that I just haven't read. But I really like that they, you know, again, just respect for the source material. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I think that what has made, like, this movie successful, Shazam successful, and what has made all the Marvel movies so successful is that, like, the people who were involved, the writers and the directors and mm-hmm. producers, they sincerely like comic books. They like these things. And so yeah. You can tell. I mean, when you watch, unfortunately, you know, Justice League and Man of Steel and all that stuff.
Batman v Superman.
Yeah, Batman yeah. v Superman. You get the impression that they're trying to write a formula movie, mm-hmm. not a movie that they are, where your writers and your directors know your source material. They know Superman and they love Superman and they love Batman and they want to create, they want to be authentic to the many, many, many writers who have come before and have also created these characters to be so loved.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of the reason that they didn't work. And I would even say that's kind of why Suicide Squad didn't work. But in this movie, you know, Margot Robbie was really involved in producing
yeah.
this film. And so you get people who enjoy their characters. They enjoy comics.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a movie that is enjoyable to watch, you
yes.
know?
So. Yeah.
My third thing was, of course, Ewan McGregor, because he's Ewan McGregor. Like, there's, but he is really good as Roman Sionis, or as Harley likes to call him, Romy.
Mm-hmm.
Ewan McGregor is great as a slightly, you know, manic character.
Yeah.
Like, you get the impression, like, he's slightly deranged, and he's just slipping into madness, you know, much at the encouragement of Victor Zsasz.
Slipping?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, because there are times where he's kind of trying on the sane side, and then he kind of, you see, like, the mask slip, where he kind of goes off the deep end, like, he's murdering a family. And, you know, very coldly. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to let the little girl live. Ew, snot bubble. Go ahead and kill her. And you're like, whoa, wait. You kind of have this, like, is he a cold, you know, calculating psychopath?
Yeah.
Or is he just crazy? And you don't really know because it slides back and forth pretty effortlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Ewan McGregor does a great job. You know, I wish that we could have learned a little bit more about how he became the Black Mask.
Yeah.
And, you know, and why. I wish that the relationship between him and Victor Zsasz could be explored. You know, I'm not a deep comic book reader. I have a hard time keeping up with them all, but I do know who Victor Zsasz is, you know, as a scary guy.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he kind of seems to be, you know, whispering over the shoulder of Roman Sionis,
mm-hmm.
encouraging him into a descent in madness. Like, you can see that he enjoys kind of provoking him into ever more, like, crazy and horrible acts.
Yeah.
And I wish that could have been explored a little bit more, because that just would have been an interesting thing. Like, did he manipulate Roman Sionis into becoming the Black Mask, or into becoming kind of this deranged killer villain psychopath, or was he already there and just found Victor Zsasz as his compliment?
Yeah.
So, either way, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. I liked him. He throws epic childish tantrums. And I, you know, just watching Ewan McGregor play that kind of character was a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. He's good in pretty much everything.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
I would agree with that too.
All right. So, honorable mention stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My honorable mention, would be, Huntress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For all the reasons mentioned previously.
Yeah. One of my honorable mentions, it was the nonlinear storytelling here.
Oh, sure.
I mean, mm-hmm. it's narrated by Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea of kind of jumping back and forth and sometimes having to pause and like do like childish script of like, who is this person and why do they want to kill
her?
Yeah,
that was fun.
Was actually fun. I'm not always a huge fan of like flashbacks and all those things within movies.
Yeah.
But I thought they did it really well, because it's just like the bouncing back and forth kind of feels like something you would expect from Harley Quinn, who, you know, is crazy.
Yeah.
So I appreciated it. I thought it kept it exciting. It kept everything intriguing and interesting. So I actually liked that.
One of mine is like right in the beginning, you see Harley like in kind of right at towards at the end of the montage where they show like her reactions to breaking it off with the Joker, and she's at the bar in the Black Masks Club.
Mm-hmm.
And, I forget why she does it, but she breaks a dude's legs.
Oh yeah.
Really gruesomely. I like that, because they were like right from the jump, remind everybody that this is a rated R movie and we're not fucking around.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that. I was wondering, it's rated R, but it from the trailers, it's not like it's gonna be Deadpool rated R. So I wonder I was like worried that it's only going to be rated R because they say, you know, fuck a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's not it.
Yeah. So. I am trying really hard not to re-picture that scene, because mm-hmm. it was really, cringe-inducing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I loved seeing that, you know, despite her madness, we continue to see Harley Quinn's psychology background at work. You mm-hmm. know, she all consistently kind of suddenly throws in her psychoanalysis of like why Roman Sionis is so upset with her and why mm-hmm. he's so crazy, and then he, you know, it goes a little bit into Huntress's like, oh, vengeance doesn't always work, it doesn't always make you feel the way that you think it's gonna feel. And I just thought that was kind of fun just to harken back that like she's crazy but she's wicked smart.
Yeah.
You know, like, she is a very, very smart woman. She's insane.
It's there. It's just all you know, scatologically disconnected, or you know, because of all the trauma from living with that guy, with a madman for however long it was.
Yeah.
All right. I don't really have any others. How about
Well, I have a thing that I liked, but it bridges into something I didn't like.
Okay.
I really was excited when we finally got Black Canary and her canary cry.
Yeah.
Like, that was really cool. So I really liked that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was, like, super frustrated that it happened at the very end of the movie, and it only happened once.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that was kind of disappointing. Like,
yeah.
I wanted more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so I see that.
It was something I really liked.
Yeah.
And then I was, like, super disappointed.
I agree with that, but also I will, to their credit, because, you know, we used to watch the Arrow, Flash, all those TV shows, and there's been a couple different canaries on that show, but the one most analogous to this one, they gave her a, you know, whatever you want to call it, canary cry, sonic scream, or whatever, but it wasn't, it was like a device that attached around her neck. Unless they changed that later.
They did.
Okay.
So later on, that was Earth 2's version of Dinah Lance. But then you meet Earth 1's later. Okay, see, now I went down the route. So, but yes, they
anyway,
do create a canary
it needs
who
to
has
be
the real
a
metahuman
ability that she can do.
Right.
And it bothered me that the TV show, at least when I was watching it, didn't give her that.
Right.
But
they got
this.
There.
Yeah. But this, you know, it's her. So.
So, okay. The only other thing I didn't really like was Cassandra Cain.
Yeah.
So I know that in comic book lore and animated lore, she is a fighter. Right, she like trained to be a fighter, an assassin. It's cool that she's a pickpocket, but I mean, yeah.
I mean,
I wasn't super excited.
Yeah, give that character a different name. I mean, calling her Cassandra Cain and then just having her be just a regular kid was super disappointing.
Yeah, she's a great thief, but
I mean,
she's just
In the comics, she's a super dark, super tragic, you know, character who, you know, is Batgirl for a while. You know, is mute for the longest time because of how her dad raised her, because her dad's a real piece of shit.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that was a bummer.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah, I feel like they could have given her a different name, just made her a different character.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was the one little piece that I was like, oh, well, what is the thing that is going to make them, you know, feel very protective? A little girl.
Yeah.
Like, it was the one kind of movie trope idea that I really felt they fell into.
Mm-hmm.
Because they tried to also make her like a streetwise punk kid, you know, but really with the heart of gold. And it didn't really pull off that way.
No.
She's kind of a snot.
Yeah. And that leads me into the other thing I really didn't like. Was it a diamond?
Yes.
The diamond MacGuffin, which feels like a relic from the fucking 1960s or something. A movie that would have been made then. I was like, really? A diamond? In this world where you could rip off any number of digital, you know, banks or whatever, get any sort of money in any number of different ways. A diamond.
That is laser etched with bank codes.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Didn't like it.
Agreed. Yeah. It didn't bother me as bad, though, as the, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But not only are we looking for it, but it happens to be in the possession of the 12-year-old girl.
Who, of course.
Protect the girl.
Right.
Protect the diamond.
Right.
Yeah, who of course swallows.
Who of course swallows.
I just need you to know that given the size of that diamond, the swallowing of that would have been really bad for her throat. And that probably would have caused some intestinal tearing at some
point in time. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So.
All right, anything else you didn't care for?
Not really. I mean, it's a fun movie. Is it silly? Is it kind of stupid at times because there's a hyena living in Harley Quinn's bathtub in her one-bedroom apartment over a restaurant? Like, okay, it's a little silly, right? Yeah. But it's also just fun and funny. And so you can overlook a lot when a movie is fun.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to say, when Ewan McGregor puts on the black mask, didn't like it.
Yeah.
That mask sucks.
Yeah, it was not very good. It kind of looked like a version of the Jim Carrey mask in The Mask.
Right.
Just, it looked like that, except all painted black.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, I guess that's it then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because we enjoyed this movie.
We enjoyed it quite a bit. It has been a bit of time since we saw it between seeing it and recording this.
That's true.
So there's a little bit of distance between it. But yeah, no, it's very, very fun. Yeah. I hope it... But Harley's going to be in the Suicide Squad movie that James Gunn's filming right now.
Right. And Margot Robbie is Harley.
Yeah.
I think that's Harley. That is smart. If DC universe, extended universe, really wants to become a thing, It would be really dumb of them to replace Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn.
Especially since she seriously had so much ownership. They gave her so much ownership over the character
In
this project. You know, and she clearly likes it and wanted that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Also liked they made sure that they connected Suicide Squad when they had the most wanted poster for Captain Boomerang.
That was awesome.
She was like, hey, I know him.
Yeah. Yeah, the little nods to the actual Suicide Squad movie were good. I appreciated them. I liked Jared Leto's character of the Joker. I think it would have been an interesting version to explore.
Yeah.
So kind of the deliberate removals of him. And his representation of the Joker was disappointing, just because I felt like where he took the character was different and unique enough that it would have been an interesting Joker to explore.
Yeah, I agree. They just misused him in that movie.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, gosh, that kind of wraps this one up.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's still in theaters. Go see it. It's
a good time. It's definitely worth watching. Do not take your small child.
Nope.
It is rated R.
For reasons.
So.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of the Cold Beer and Cool Movie Podcast. Next week. Unsure.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
I am getting to go to an advanced screening of The Invisible Man.
Yes.
The new horror movie thriller from Blumhouse.
Yeah. I am not going because those previews have completely freaked me out, and I will look forward to hearing what you say about it.
Whatever we end up doing next week, I'm going to bring it up.
Yeah, of course. So
we'll figure out what we're going to do next week. And then, but yeah, looking forward to a lot of stuff this year. But we're just kind of in a little weird patch of lull of stuff we're not really interested in.
Oh, no.
You know, so.
So if you have a suggestion, dear listener, please let us know.
Email the podcast, ddkpodcasting@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear it. We'll figure something out. All right. But anyway, like always, you can find us on SoundCloud and iTunes and Apple Podcasts, whatever Google podcasting app Google makes, we're on that. Subscribe and download our episodes there. You can review us if you want. Again, email the podcast if you want with recommendations for both beer and or movies. Tell us how we're doing. And anyway, until next week,
go see a movie
and thanks for listening.